Welcome to Local Energy Rules, a podcast about people putting together great community renewable energy projects and examining how energy policies help or hurt the development of clean local power. My name is Wade Underwood. This week, John Farrell speaks to Brian Minish, CEO of South Dakota Wind Partners, a limited liability company formed to provide an opportunity for investment by South Dakota residents in the growing wind industry. Brian talks about his experience working with local groups to increase ownership in a South Dakota wind farm. Here's John and Brian now.
Welcome to the program, Brian.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, one of the things that I thought was so interesting about this project when I first heard about it is that it was kind of a piggybacking on a larger wind project and then, taking a few of those turbines and finding a lot of different owners in South Dakota that could take part of them. Could you tell us a little bit about how that came together?
Yeah, it was a nice partnership that came about when Basin Electric was building the Crow Lake Wind Farm, which is out near White Lake, South Dakota. And there was an interest amongst several groups here within the state of trying to find ways to get a broader investment group involved in wind ownership. And so the four groups, the East River Power Cooperative, South Dakota Corn Growers, the South Dakota Farm Bureau, and the South Dakota Farmers Union, had gotten together and decided to take a look at seeing whether it would make sense to add on some additional turbines to that project and be able to get these outside investors in the project. And so they gave us a call at our company called Allied Service Corporation, and we did an analysis of whether we thought they would be feasible to structure it in a way that we could attract what I would call ordinary investors from across the state of South Dakota. And we determined we could, especially since we were still eligible for the federal grant at that point in time. And so we structured it accordingly and took a few months, worked out the agreements with Basin, and then went out and started raising capital in the summer of 2010.
Now, one of the things I think that's particularly impressive about this project is the number of folks that you got involved. I believe there's over 600 different farmers and other South Dakota residents that are owners of the seven turbines that are part of your project?
Yeah, that's correct. We have about 614 investors. We structured the offering in a way that we hopefully would make it attractive to different groups of investors. We didn't just go out and raise the equity, we also raised the debt through the offering. And so it allowed us to have a couple of the different classes of shares such that it was predominantly a debt instrument paying a fixed interest. And we were paying 6.75% and 7% interest on those. And then we had one class that was predominantly an equity investment, so people that could utilize the early year tax losses from the project the best, and so that, again, they would make primarily equity investments. And it worked well. We raised all the funds in about 6 weeks with meetings we held here across the state.
Now, there's a lot of interest in figuring out how to replicate projects like this, and I wanted to highlight what you mentioned earlier, that it was brought about in large part because of the availability of the cash grant. And for those who aren't familiar, normally a wind project can use a tax credit called the production tax credit. That's a payment of about 2.2 cents per kilowatt hour of energy production. But for a limited time, after the federal government passed its stimulus legislation, you could take a cash grant instead. Can you explain a little bit about how that made it easier to do this project?
Yeah, there were three options. You could take the production tax credit, or you could take the investment tax credit, which is a 30% tax credit. Again, you need to have income that would be, you could be able to offset with a credit to make it useful. And then the third option was the tax grant, where basically you could take that 30% investment tax credit as a cash payment instead of as a tax credit. And in doing that, that would make everybody eligible in our project to receive the benefit of this, the federal incentive that way, because it would just lower the cost of the project and allow a lower equity level to come into the project and therefore have ownership. It worked very nicely for that, and I would really encourage any legislators that are looking at programs or the renewal of the PTC to try to include that again, because it is the easiest way for a community-based ownership structure to be put together.
Now you, you know, when we've spoken before, you've mentioned that there were a number of other groups in other states having heard of your project that were interested in moving ahead. But now that the cash grant program has expired, it sounds like that might not be as easy to do as it was for you to put your project together.
Well, yeah, I think it does make it a little bit more difficult. I think you can still do it. We're working on projects in New York and in Texas currently, where we still are having to go out and, assuming that we have a production tax credit available after the first year, where we would still have to find the cash equity investors that would come in that can utilize the tax credit and give them some ownership based off of their investment utilizing the tax credits. And so it makes it more difficult to do because usually you're dealing with some major corporation that can utilize those tax credits the best. Versus other ways. One of the things we would like to see is if we could have some of the same benefits they have in the oil and gas industry with these limited partnerships that would give the ordinary investor, I'll call him, the ability to use his tax credit and get ordinary income. That would be a real help for community-based programs. Then we could again pass that incentive back down to the ordinary investor.
Now, for those of you folks who aren't familiar with it, this issue of ordinary income and other kinds of income, the problem that's facing a lot of renewable energy projects that want to use the tax credits is that investors have to apply those tax credits against tax liability that comes from so-called passive income, which is generally from certain types of investments, not from things like wages or salaries, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem is that, there's not nearly the population of people that have the passive income from their investments as would obviously have ordinary income from their labor.
And so like either the limited partnership arrangement that you were talking about or a cash grant program, both are ways to get around that problem.
Yeah, both would be very helpful in helping us get that broader base of investment.
Now, you had mentioned that you are working with some folks, maybe in New York about putting this together. Do you have hopes of doing projects in other states? Are there other folks that are trying to replicate your model that seem like they're going to be able to move ahead too?
We've had, again, from some of the publicity that our project here in South Dakota got, we had several people contact us and wondering about trying to replicate it in their markets. In the New York project, we've been able to go out and raise seed capital through a private placement and have that in place, and then we would have hopes to go out in a more broader, maybe an interstate offering like we did here in South Dakota for the investment capital. But again, it's going to take identifying some people that can come in and utilize the tax credit to kind of put that whole piece together.
Mm-hmm. One question I wanted to ask, just since you mentioned an intrastate offering, this is kind of the key to one of the big pieces of putting together a community project is how do you raise that capital? There are a lot of interesting ways sort of under the Securities and Exchange Commission that you are able to put that kind of program together and that put limits on what kind of investor you can seek out, whether or not they have to have a certain amount of income or assets. Be a wealthy investor, really, or there are some exceptions to that rule. And what you mentioned in terms of the intrastate offering, the limitation, as I understand it, is that you can only seek out people within a particular state. Then that means there's sort of a lower threshold in terms of filing with the SEC, et cetera. But for a community project, doesn't seem like that's a terribly big barrier.
Well, yeah, what it does is it gives you the ability to sell within any one particular state. Many states have those provisions, not all, but many do, that allow you to have an offering within the state, much like you'd have a federal securities offering in that you can advertise it, promote it, bring people in, but you're just limited to people in your state, and then you are obligated to abide by the securities laws of whatever state you're in. The other alternatives are to do private placements, where you're only able to contact and sell to accredited investors, and there are certain income or net worth limitations on that. Now, that the rules of that are changing as we speak, and it appears that we're going to be able to do a wider level of promotion and advertising using the private placement than we have in the past, which might make it a better tool than it has been in the past for these types of offerings, and then at least we can go out and promote it and advertise. Still needs to do with accredited investors, but you don't necessarily have to have a pre-existing relationship with them as we have in the past. And then the third option is to do a federally registered security where you can offer it to anybody nationwide, but that has a lot more stringent time barriers and it takes a lot more upfront capital and expenses with attorneys to get that through. So that's kind of the last option if you can't make one of the other two fit your needs.
So this may not be entirely related to the private placement thing you were discussing, although I'm glad to hear that might be getting a little bit easier to do. I know the federal government also passed what was called the Jobs Act earlier this year that is going to enable what they called crowdfunding, which should make it, as I understand it, a little bit easier to raise capital for community-based projects. Now, I believe there's a dollar limit on that will make it not particularly useful for community-based wind projects, which are going to be more expensive than, say, a solar project. But it does seem like the regulations may be moving in the direction of making it easier to do community-based projects.
Well, I think that was the attempt. You're right, the crowdfunding is another option, but you're right, it does have limited, I think it's $1 million is all that you could raise that way, which would be a pretty small project as far as a community wind project. So don't look at that to be real helpful to us. I think the private placement changes will probably have a more beneficial effect for community-based projects.
When you think back on what you did with the South Dakota Wind Partners and getting all those investors together, what remains in your mind as sort of one of the biggest barriers that you had to overcome to make that project successful?
Well, you first have to find that partner that would like to work with you, like we did in there. That's something that might be difficult to replicate. But I think if you talk to Basin Electric, I think you'd find that they found it in the long term to be actually very beneficial to them. One of the things that they did is they sold their renewable energy credits off to General Motors, and they were able to build on General Motors was on their website a real nice piece talking about the project and how they were able to tie the community into it. So I think it was very beneficial to them, and that's what GM liked about the project and why they wanted to buy those credits was because it was a community-based project. So I think there's a lot of reasons for some of the major wind builders to look at partnering with some local groups because I think it makes the upfront process usually a little bit easier as far as local buy-in, and then I think there's some real public relations benefits for the organizations coming in and not just taking all the assets and moving the money out of state, but also finding ways to leave it with some of the current, the local investors in the project and neighbors and community folks. So I think that is one of the more difficult things to do is find somebody that's willing to look deeply into what advantages there would be with working with a local group and have part of the project locally owned.
I'm always optimistic that people will pick up on that a little bit more. One thing you mentioned when I interviewed you in 2011 about your project was that you said that local ownership, like with the South Dakota Wind Partners, can help reduce opposition to wind power projects. And I know that's been kind of a growing problem for some of the utility-based or larger corporate financed projects. So it seems like there might be an opportunity there as well where, that tie into the community is what can help those projects continue to move forward.
Well, I think absolutely. I know in New York it's been very helpful for us to be able to have the opportunity for everybody in the community to be invested in the project. And as a result, we've had very little opposition. And, that project continues to move ahead nicely, and I think in large part due to the fact that, that we have currently 75 investors or so in the Ithaca community that are invested in the project.
Well, Brian, if folks wanted to learn more about your project or about the services that you provide putting together community-based projects, where should they go?
Well, the South Dakota Wind Partners, we have a website, sdwindpartners.com, and then our company, Valad Service Corporation, valadservices.com is where you can find us, or or you could call it 605-366-2373.
Brian, we really appreciate you spending time with us this morning, and great work out there. We hope to see some more projects soon.
Well, yes, yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to be talking about a couple other projects in a year or so that we've been able to get done in the same fashion.
Terrific. Well, we'll hopefully have you back then to talk about those as well. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was John Farrell and Brian Minish. Brian is the CEO of South Dakota Wind Partners. For questions or comments, please email jfarrell@ilsr.org with Local Energy Rules Podcast in the subject. John's Twitter handle is John F. Farrell. This podcast was published on April 18th, 2013. Thanks for tuning in.